conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The end of the week. It is Friday on the front porch on the horn. A little chilly. We may have to fire up the chiminea for a little heat. A little chilly on the front porch, but there's a number of ways to warm yourself. The crockery jug over there with some 140 proof high octane mountain rocket fuel can be quite the help. Hot tea, sweet tea, lemonade, all available upon request. Just come up on the porch, prop your feet up on the porch railing, and sit down and get ready for some cussing and discussing over the next 3 hours or so. Nice to get a full week under my belt, especially in light of the fact that there will not be a full week next week. Program reminder, as I have been reminding, Monday is no show. I have to be in Charleston. The Environmental Protection Agency is coming to visit, and I will be among those who are trying to give them a little push. We will all be pushing. They need pushing. Word reached me today that 250 acres of Coal River Mountain have been tentatively cleared by the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting. Protect my butt. Coal River Mountain, remember? The last mountain? Yeah, 250 acres have been given the green light for destruction by Working Right Alpha Energy, which is just Massey Energy without the Mount Doom Devil Horn M. Such being the case, there's a certain urgency to meeting with the EPA on Monday. It was urgent already. Now it's more so. As such, no, I won't be there. Then Tuesday, let me reiterate, Tuesday is a Dr. Bill Prism West Virginia chat session on American history featuring Professor Keith Lilly and a host of players from the 19th century, which is Keith's area of expertise. Dr. Bill's expertise is on the founding of the Republic. It will be quite engaging, and I encourage you to watch it. It'll start at 7 p.m., not our usual 6 p.m. start time. By the way, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Conversation Radio, the Head On Radio Network. No, it will be very engaging. You can listen to it right here on the regular Horn stream, or you can watch it on our Ustream channel. Now, you can watch the Ustream channel quite easily simply by going to headonradionetwork.com. There's a view window right there in the sidebar. Easy to scroll down to. So, that's the beginning. That means the first live show of the week will come on Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Now, depending on how you view things, if you like to jump the gun or if you want to wait a couple of days, either way is fine by me. But anyway you slice it, the Horn is 6 years old. We will be 6 years old on Monday. It was 6 years ago, Monday, the 24th of October, that everything first fired up on this internet version of the Horn. So, cool, huh? How many other shows have gone by the wayside as Air America sort of recedes into the sad, sad distance? We started conceptualizing the horn and doing terrestrial radio as Head On with Bob Kincaid before Air America ever went on the air. That was, what was that? 2004. I had started in 2003. Still standing. Sometimes we teeter. We're teetering this month, as a matter of fact. Contributions are way down. Not just a whole lot of thrifty 250 contributions coming in, but, you know, some months are like that. And it may get rougher as we get toward the end of the year and people have to worry about Christmas and Thanksgiving. I certainly understand that. We are grateful for every bit of support that comes in. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. You don't have to have a PayPal account in order to make a contribution, a donation. There is also a snail mail address, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, Paul Mary Bubba, 318 Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. That's Beckley, not Berkeley like in California. You'd be surprised the number of people who make that mistake. Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. So it is Friday on the front porch, and, I don't know, we can light the candles early if you want to, or we can light them on Wednesday. Matters not to me. It's just it's the nature of the human critter, I suppose, to mark anniversaries and milestones. Going back in time, before folks figured out that the Earth actually revolved around the sun, and not vice versa, witness that Old Testament Bible verse that talks about the sun standing still in the sky. Whoopsie. People marked time by the moon because it was much more easy to calculate. Thus, a number of ancient calendars are lunar-based and not solar. But from time immemorial, we have liked to mark the passing of seasons. How many summers old are you? How many winters old are you? But we'll just stay with standard calendrical calculation. The horn is 6. And I'm pretty proud of that. And we could never have gotten here without the help of a lot of people. A whole lot of people. First and foremost, you who contribute to keep things going, keep the bills paid, keep the wolf away from the doorstep, the lupine pest off the porch. Front Porch Friday wouldn't be a lot of fun with a wolf up there. They're fun to look at a distance, but, well, you know, they're wolves. But also a number of people who have made it happen over the course of the years. You heard Bruce Birch call in the other night with his amazingly intelligent, dedicated young son, Casey. Bruce was part of the beginnings of things. So was John Fox, who is still with us. Plugging away day in and day out. Ben Birch has been with us from the beginning and is still there, running WhiteRoseSociety.org. We were Ben's first foray into live streaming. He had merely been podcasting. Merely. Come on, Bob. Everything was pre-recorded, though, on White Rose before we went live, and it was a whole new door opening. Very exciting. Many others, Peter Godbold, who kept us all sane early on simply by keeping me from collapsing in a heap every time a computer went. He is beloved to this day. Our news ninjas have been with us almost from the very beginning as well, Susan and Gene. Texas Betsy has been with us near forever. The list is too long to catch everybody. Lottie, of course, in the chat room. Our dear friend Sue from Ohio. Billy Shears. Michael Kid A. Rick Goodner. Joe Vecchio. Guy James. Wow. Just wow. Yeah, Lottie was involved before Texas Betsy was, but It's a long time collaboration, just the same. So just because it is the marking of an annual event, mentioning folks like that, and of course, if you listen to the program every evening, you'll hear Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Those two individuals are Gina, who is the inspiration behind all of this. She was Boss Man Wayne's lovely wife, and she wanted to see liberal progressive radio take root here in the Mountain State. Bless her heart, she did not live to hear the opening broadcast on October 24th, 2005. The horn is a living memorial to her. Judy, of course, is Judy Bonds, Goldman Environmental Prize winner, tireless advocate for real human rights in Appalachia, worker toward the day when we will no longer be blasted and poisoned. She passed away last January, like so many other hillbillies, eaten by the cancers that the coal industry makes possible in all their myriad and evil ways. And she it was that understood the desperate need for our side to be constantly talking about our issues. And she it was who was behind the decision of Coal River Mountain Watch to become a partial sponsor of this program, as they have remained to this day. So all told, it is almost incalculable what it has taken to keep all of this going. And it is it serves as a constant inspiration to me. And I am grateful and honored that you find what the horn does to be special. But I will tell you, it is made special far more by you than by me. Because frankly, I'm not particularly enamored of filibobstering night in and night out. The magic is in the conversation. So just that little note. It's about 13 and a half minutes past the hour as we begin this Friday on the front porch. And Lord, what a stack! You know, we can have a little fun here and there. We can sort of talk about things that go beyond the normal, usual scope, or maybe are sort of tangential. Yeah, a couple of other folks that have been with us for a very long time, noted by Texas Betsy, the smart mom, Chino Deb, and Cassie. Cassie got here. You heard from Cassie last night on the program. Cassie got to the horn the night before Texas Betsy did. And we have listened, not so much watched, but listened to Cassie grow up. Now a sophomore at Princeton who just aced all of her midterms. Yay, Cassie. Cassie at college.com is her blog, by the way. So, where to begin? It's almost like the crazy, so it's like a snowdrift. You know, the wind, it's bad enough the snow falls, but then the wind blows the snow and it drifts up against your door or your wall, and the next thing you know, you can't dig your way out. Of course, every night of the week this week, we have had some manifestation of the ongoing conception that they want it all. Redwoods in the Pacific, mountains in West Virginia and Appalachia generally. endangered cultures in the Southeast. But make no mistake, it is not merely here in the United States that they want it all applies and vigorously. A story from MSNBC.com, kindly provided to me this morning by my head writer, who I had not mentioned until this moment, my head writer David in Tennessee, who has been with us from the very beginning. David in Tennessee goes back to the bad old days of terrestrial radio even. Several do. No, it's not just here in the United States or in the so-called developed world that they want it all. One of the modern seven wonders of the world, and something that might also be considered to be a monument to human folly, even if it is an amazing feat of engineering, the Great Wall of China is under threat. It's visible from space, but maybe not for long. I say a monument to human folly because tremendous quantities of life and blood and bone and sinew and treasure went into the building of the Great Wall of China to keep out the uncivilized hordes from the realm of the Son of Heaven. And you'd think a wall like this would stop just about anybody that didn't have an airplane. And it would have. Except for it won't stop somebody who has bribed the gatekeeper. And that's exactly what happened. Walls are only so good as the gates that are in them and the people who administer those gates and have the keys. The Great Wall of China is 4,000 miles long. It crosses 11 Chinese provinces. It is likely the single greatest tourist attraction in the entire People's Republic of China. But when people visit the Great Wall of China, mostly they're visiting the wall near the capital of Beijing. You get about 125 miles southwest of Beijing in Liyuan County in Hebei Province. Who knows? And it is a very different situation. Because there, renegade mines have been dug. Prospectors digging for copper, for iron, for molybdenum, for nickel, with some of the mines having been excavated as near as 100 yards from the wall itself. Some of them are legally permitted by the Chinese government, by the Land Resources Bureau, who do not take into account the stability of this monument. Others, though, are pirate mines, if you will. And with copper, iron, molybdenum, and nickel, you have to take into account that these things have commercial value on the market. It is in search of wealth via these metals that the miners dig into the earth, putting this monument of engineering and human determination at risk. They want it all, every last scrap, every bit of it, with no reservation. There are places along the wall where it is simply ruined. The Japanese destroyed a lot of the wall, big sections of it, between 1937 and 1945. But the Chinese themselves, peasant villagers, have looted the wall for bricks so that they could engage in road building and housing construction in the 1950s and the 1960s. They want it all. Because it is the profiteering miners who are doing the greatest amount of damage to this monument. They want it all. You may recall a short time back, our buddy John, Dr. John, in upstate New York, sent along a little something about Florida's Governor Rick Scott more or less declaring open war on anthropology majors. Well, guess what? I can't say for certain, but I'm betting that zoologists and biologists will soon be added to that list of ologists. Anthropologist, zoologist, biologist. All those ologists, of course, that logos word that ends all of those disciplines, geology, biology, zoology, oceanography. But all of those ologies, archaeology, that one word, logos, a Greek word meaning word. The first chapter of John in the New Testament says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. I think that has deeper meanings than most fundamentalists understand. All those logos studies, biology literally translated means life words. Zoology, animal words. Archaeology, old words. Anthropology, human words. Well, I'm guessing zoology and biology are going to be on Rick Scott's list pretty soon. Because they're out there making Florida look bad some more. I got this from News Ninja Gene earlier today. If I haven't reminded you in a while, News Ninja Gene gets up every morning and reads the entire internet. Nothing escapes his attention. There are a couple of critters that have lived in Florida for eons. One of them, the South Florida rainbow snake. There's a photo of the rainbow snake. It's pretty. You know, I'm sure it would be quite fascinating to look at a distance. I don't like to get personal with snakes. The Center for Biological Diversity back in 2010 sought Endangered Species Act protection for the rainbow snake. They also sought Endangered Species Act protection for the fairy shrimp. The rainbow snake lived only from Fish Eating Creek. Flows into the west side of Lake Okeechobee. Iridescent bluish black with red stripes on its back and sides. Red and yellow patches on its belly and throat. And a yellow chin. Must have been something to look at. Well, the federal government responded to that Center for Biological Diversity request that the rainbow snake and the fairy shrimp be put on the endangered species list. They responded by saying, hey, rainbow snake and fairy shrimp don't need to be on the endangered species list. Well, why is that? Because they're extinct. They're gone. They're done. There's probably a condominium sitting on the last resting place of the last rainbow snake. Maybe there's a Hooters sitting next to the pond the only pond where lived the fairy shrimp, and it was them damn zoologists and biologists that pointed it out. You know, it occurs to me that what we're looking at here with these Repiglicans and, you know, Florida, development, because, you know, that's all they got. One of these days, the whole blessed state, no offense to you guys, Florida listeners, one of these days, the entire state of Florida is just going to sink. Proof of that coming from the fact that sinkholes open rather frequently in that delicate ecosystem. It was just south of Gainesville that the Florida fairy shrimp existed, only one single pond. And yeah, the pond was destroyed by development. Goodbye, fairy shrimp! I'm sure the American Family Association is, Brian Fisher. God needs to kill all the grizzly bears. I'm sure he's gone. Glad the fairy shrimp is gone. Well, you know, it clearly says in Deuteronomicus, suffer not a fairy shrimp to live. I mentioned this to our good buddy Dr. John a little bit ago, because I know he continues to follow the Rick Scott War on Anthropology story. John said, maybe this is the plan. Once Florida's rid of every life form but humans, mosquitoes, and syphilis, there's no need for any pesky biologists, right? Come on, Florida Panther, get with the program. Die. Come on, Key Deer. Die. On that note, did you see that Scott has called for a study of employment rates by Florida college students once they graduate? Shh. Guess what discipline the researchers for that sort of study would be from? Do I have to say it? Anthropologists. They do that kind of thing, the anthropologists. Told him the Great Wall story, too, and he said, damn, that's a shame. We're so focused on immediate profit and power that we destroy those things that made us who we are. Like Appalachia's mountains. You know, all of these mountains that the coal companies blow up, it doesn't matter which mountain they're blowing up at any given moment. You can walk around them and find rock shelters. You go in the rock shelters, you find points, you find tool heads. Stone. 10,000, 12,000 years old. The coal companies pay what are called contract archaeologists to come in. Nothing here! Those contract archaeologists who do that sort of dirty work are not held in high esteem by real archaeologists like our buddy John. It might be an arrowhead, or hell, it may just be a piece of rock that fell off the rock wall. Who knows? Certainly nothing of any cultural significance here.
Well, but what about the burial? What about the ancient burial?
That's just a bunch of dead Indians. Blow her up! Now, John says, we're so focused on immediate profit and power that we destroy those things that made us who we are. Like Appalachia's mountains, like millennia-old villages in Turkey destroyed by dams, like the Bamiyan Buddhas of Afghanistan blown to smithereens by religious freaks from the Taliban. Kabul's museum destroyed by them as well. John says, you can't put a goddamn dollar sign on those things or an entire species or your kid's health. John adds, I can't do a second challenge this month, but I'll have a contribution coming on Monday for the Horn's birthday. It might be worth talking a bit about how a nice birthday present would be a little contribution, love. I'm just going to write up a little note for Monday. I'll look forward to reading it. Thank you very kindly for the Thrifty 250 contribution that just rolled in. It's much appreciated. No, we will be busy this evening. Goodbye. Goodbye, Rainbow Snake. Goodbye, Fairy Shrimp. Just sounds precious, doesn't it? And maybe it wasn't teeny tiny like sea monkeys. You know, those are brine shrimp. I aggravated the daylights out of my mother every time we went into TG&Y.
Mom, can I have some Z monkeys?
Son, it's a ripoff. But I'd sit there and I'd look at the little king sea monkey and the queen sea monkey and the little baby sea monkeys play. How many millions of dollars were made on sea monkeys? Who, once you did everything right, and the little brine shrimp hatched, didn't really, and there were certainly no kings and queens. No. It was just slightly less of a rube job than the pet rock. I like to think fairy shrimp were different from little brine shrimp sea monkeys. Goodbye, fairy shrimp. That was a mighty nice 2 or 3 million year run you had. Till the Hooters came along. Or the Fuddruckers. Or the Johnny Rockets. Or the Taco Hell. Or the Burger Thing. Or the Clown Food. Or the Outlet Mall. Or Margaritaville. Or God knows what. Teensy, tiny little fairy shrimp was taking up too much space for capitalism. Dang. Then there's a little story about the law of unintended consequence. You know, they want it all. They want it all. A little story illustrating the law of unintended consequences from Louisiana. I don't think these well-intentioned repiglicans and whatnot meant for that's why it's the law of unintended consequences. I don't think they meant for this to happen. But these geniuses have outlawed the use of cash in certain transactions in the state of Louisiana. Oh, whatever will Ron Paul and his weird little polistas say? No, really, they have. It is illegal in the state of Louisiana, thanks to the work of Democrats and Repiglicans alike in their state legislature, via something called House Bill 195, to purchase anything secondhand with cash money.
Yeah, I'm Ron Paul, and you know what? I can buy a gallon of gas for a silver dime. Well, by God, you can't buy an old pair of Converse for that silver effing dime, Ron Paul, because it's illegal. You want them worn-out old Adidases?
You're going to have to use a credit card, buddy, or write a check. It's supposed to be a crime-fighting measure. Make it easier for cops to trace stolen goods, illegal items, and whatnot. It went into full force and effect on July 1st this past. And there were so many eager beavers out there busy hoorahing this thing that they never quite bothered to notice. They were requiring sellers of secondhand goods, no matter what, to keep a complete record of who buys what and make sure that everything was sold with a paper trail, no cash. It's amazing. Attorney Tad Ackle says, interestingly enough, although pawn shops are still required to obtain clients' personal information and transmit their client database information to law enforcement, they are exempt from the restriction of cash payments. A jeweler next door to a pawn shop, however, cannot offer the clients customers the same payment method offered by its competing pawn shop neighbor. Beautiful, isn't it? The best laid plans of mice and men gang aft to glee. There's going to be hell, you know, and there's some nice thrift shops. Secondhand, vintage clothing stores, that kind of thing. All over Louisiana. This is going to suck for them. I mean, really, use a debit card for something that might cost 75 cents? Write a 75-cent check? Bank's going to love that as well. But the teabaggers and the libertarians aren't. It's all crickets. But they're not that sharp in the first place. The whole thing is reminiscent of, or equally reminiscent of this foo-frah that is beginning to develop, thanks in part to Rachel Maddow shining a rather condescending light on it. You know, a few years ago they had one of those all, you know, every sperm is sacred, all fertilized eggs are people referendums, constitutional amendment referendums out in Colorado, but there were too many normal people in Colorado, and Colorado turned it down. Next up, Mozlipi. Because I guess, you know, I guess in some circles, you know, the minute that sacred egg is fertilized by the sacred sperm, it becomes a sacred person in the eyes of the Lord Jesus Christ. You know, you pack that religious claptrap around it, and it sort of hardens like a shell, and it becomes really hard to attack. But I'm proud of the fact that since we're sort of mentioning a little bit early the horn's birthday, and we'll mention it again a little bit late, I'm proud of the fact that years and years ago I said something, and I stand by it to this day, and I've repeated it from time to time, that in the ongoing assault on women and their insides, the right wing spends a lot of time talking about Roe versus Wade and how they want to repeal it. And you've even got Democrats and liberal and progressive people out there who will say, well, you know, I personally think the decision was very poorly decided. But I said all along that they're not after Roe versus Wade. What they're after is a little old Supreme Court case called Griswold versus Connecticut. And oddly enough, it has nothing to do with the National Lampoon Vacation series. Griswold versus Connecticut is the Supreme Court case that answered the question once and for all, may human beings in the United States use contraception so that pregnancy is not always the outcome of sexual union, or so that pregnancy can be evaded as an outcome of sexual union between a man and a woman. Later on, Roe versus Wade would, to a large extent, rest on grounds formulated within Griswold. And again, I repeat, it is Griswold that these right-wing womb Nazis... Oh, he said the N-word. I'm just as bad as Susan Sarandon. You know, she called the Pope a Nazi the other day, and the poor little Bill O'Donohue, or whatever his name is, from the Catholic League of America, about had a baby. Would have had to start a whole new religion. I mean, come on, Ratzinger was a member of the Hitler Youth. I mean, he just was. You were in the Hitler Youth. You were a Nazi. Just saying. But no, these womb Nazis of the right wing have always been after Griswold versus Connecticut, and they are proving it in Mississippi with their personhood amendment. Every little fertilized egg is a person. The problem is that, and again, in a decidedly condescending little segment, Rachel Maddow pointed out the fact that a fertilized egg is not just sitting around. A fertilized egg is on the move. up from the ovary, down through the fallopian tubes. And it's traveling even after it's been fertilized, and it does, this is baby 101. And it attaches to the uterine wall where the placenta develops and the umbilicus and the baby inside and all of that stuff. And Willard Romney has begun to get some rather difficult questions. He got a difficult question from a woman in Sioux City, Iowa, who asked him straight out, "You say you support a personhood amendment, but don't you realize that would forestall American women's access to hormonal-based birth control?" Well, I'm not opposed to birth control. Birth control stops conception. No. And Rachel Maddow did a very good job, albeit from a very condescending place, in explaining the whole process, which I need not explain to you because you know it. It was condescending because she did it in this cutesy fashion where she took the guys to the man cave to explain how the girly parts work. First of all, her audience is comprised largely of liberal and progressive people, some of whom are male, who probably didn't need that. Not a lot of conservative freaks watching the program. But there's a larger point to this. And that is, and this goes hand in hand with something I saw early this morning on a certain TV program, also on MSNBC, that I constantly catch grief for tuning into. And that was a great long palaver about whether or not Herb Kane is a serious presidential candidate. Of course he's not. But they must have spent 15 minutes talking about it. And I sat there, as I said, thinking, my God, Dennis Kucinich on his best day in 2000, when he was talking about issues that he turned out to be 100% correct about, could not have gotten this kind of coverage. And so it is that while they sit there, these little snobs around all with their little expensive branded paper coffee cups, bemoaning the lack of gravitas of one Herb Kane, enable him. He proved that he was good for 15 minutes of program palaver, without which they might have had to talk about, I don't know, Mika's handbag. Oh, I gave a name away. Ultimately, whether it be Herb Kane, Willard Romney, Michelle Bachmann, who is concerned that now that the United States has done military stuff in Libya, we might suddenly find ourselves going to Africa. Oh, we did. All of these for-profit media mavens point inexorably toward one thing. None of these repiglicans have the basic intelligence requisite to occupying the office of the President of the United States of America. They're just not very damned smart. They are, in fact, one could argue, unintelligent. I don't even think the question's open anymore on Michelle Bachmann. Herb Cain and his Uzbeki-Beki-Beki stand kind of put paid to that inquiry with it, right? And Willard Romney walking around explaining to a woman who has a womb how contraception works inside it and him not having one and getting it completely wrong. You know, Newt Gingrich's done it. Rick's Brofromix Santorum, thank you, Michael, arguing that being included in a Saturday Night Live skit was bullying on a par with the kind of anti-gay bullying that causes teenagers to kill themselves. Ron Paul, anytime he opens his mouth, with the exception of talking about Ronald Reagan being a dumbass for his international adventurism and the stupidity of our foreign wars, but all that crazy Randian garbage, there are none of them that have the brain... If you could sit them down and IQ test the lot of them, they could not qualify to carry on a conversation on the horn. Because they frankly don't have the intellectual muscle requisite to the task. It was astonishing. And even with the condescension thrown in, I'm glad Rachel Maddow did the piece on Willard Romney, because it really opens up the door. You really get a picture of the right-wing vision of America. And frankly, with Halloween hot on our trail, it is scary. Scarier than any vampire movie. Scarier than any mummy, any monster. Scarier than zombies. I'm in the process of reading a book. You know, I've been on a Richard K. Morgan kick ever since Reverbo put me onto him. And I'm in the process of reading one now called 13. It was named 13 in the United States because the original title was like Black Man, said the publisher. And in it, the world has shifted dramatically, not geologically, but geopolitically. And the nations along the Pacific Rim have formed some sort of an alliance. And back here in Heartland is just a country that's, it calls itself a republic. Maybe it still calls itself the United States. That hasn't been alluded to yet. But it is generally simply referred to as Jesus Land. And ignorant people come from Jesus Land. Stupid people come from Jesus Land. Benighted people come from Jesus Land. And it's a little picture of our future. It goes on and on. I'm surprised, given the level of intellectual depth in the Repiglican field, I am surprised that Alabama's junior senator, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood, is not in the field. Got his little glasses halfway down his little old nose. Got his little old ears flapping out in the breeze. Talks like he got a mouthful of cornmeal mush. It's Friday on the front porch, so, you know, again, you can scream or you can giggle. I choose to giggle. Senator Sessions, who once noted that, "I always thought the Klan was a pretty good organization till I found out they smoked the marijuana." Who once advised in the Justice Department, who once advised an African-American colleague, "Boy, you want to be careful how you talk to white women down here." No, really.
Senator Sessions is a good conservative. So necessarily his word about the fiscal health of the new United States will mark her.
Well, everything except that giving America away to the 1%. Not so concerned about that. But he is concerned. Because he's a patriotic market. And he's found himself a real live, honest to goodness, no kidding, something to worry about. You know what? You know what's going on in this country? Now, I'll tell you. Thanks to Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of what? We now know, well, we got a lot. Eating is out of control in this your country. There's way too many people eating food in America. You don't believe me, do you? Here.
But you have a proposal that would make it more difficult for people to get food stamps. Is that the right thing to do right now?
No program in our government has surged out of control more dramatically than food stamps, and nothing is being done about it. Nobody's looking under the hood. It has doubled in the last 3 years. It has quadrupled from $20 billion to $80 billion in the last 10 years. When it started, it was 1 in 50 people on the food stamp program. Now it's 1 in 7. Lottery winners, multi-million-dollar lottery winners, are getting food stamps because the money is considered to be an asset, not an income. One of the Fast and Furious gun buyers who spent hundreds of thousands of dollars buying illegal weapons was on food stamps.
For every lottery winner that has food stamps, there's probably a lot more people who really need them that have them, right?
Well, look, do you think there are four times as many people need food stamps today as they did in 2001? That answers it. This year they're proposing another 14% increase in food stamps without any real reform to understand how it is that it surged so dramatically. We cannot do this. We don't have the money. If Congress doesn't understand that we can't continue to double the food stamp program every 3 years.
You got that? Well, we all know I can't do math on the fly, but anybody, has anything happened since 2001 in the United States of any that might cause food stamp usage to go up? Anything? Bueller?
Well, that answers itself. You think there are four times as many people who need food stamps today as in 2001? That answers itself.
Problem is, Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions will flood.
The answer is yes! How many unemployed were there in 2001?
How many unemployed are there in 2011, Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions will flood?
These people are dumber than a handful of hammers! I mean stupid with a capital stew. And I guess that would be okay if bastards like Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions Hood didn't have the power to stop things in their tracks like food stamps that keep Americans from starving to death. But he does. This would be cute if he was one of those raving backbenchers who just sought out TV cameras because he was just feeling lonely and ignored. Food stamps is out of control. All these people out there eating, and every last one of them is a lottery winner. There's a win in the lottery all over the place. I know a fellow won a $2 scratch-off game. He's getting food stamps now. Where's the justice in that? It would be funny
But they're not just stupid. They're stupid, and they hold power. But they're not just stupid and hold power. They're stupid, and they hold power, and at the very core of them, they are some mean-spirited bastards.
Jefferson Beauregard, Sessions of Hood. You better watch how you talk around the white women, boy.
And every time he stands for election, he cruises back into office. And so we come back to the eternal question of what the hell's wrong with the people of Alabama? I mean, there is a significant portion of the Alabama population that is African American. And I just can't see them storming to the polls to vote for
Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of Hood.
What the hell's going on down there? And I got another Alabama story while we're at it. But Jesus, I've filibobstered for 56 minutes. It is Friday on the front porch. Hopefully y'all are good and lubricated now from the jug and the sweet tea and the lemonade, and we'll be able to get some conversation going on here. Too much eating. You're way too much eating. It's out of control, this eating. And yet, by the same token, if, say, you suggest that, yes, there is too much eating going on, and that maybe we should eat less in the way of styro food.
Well, that's a sickening government intrusion onto the freedom of American choice is what it is.
But there, I guess what I'm getting at is there comes a time, and maybe we are well past it, when prattling hillbillies with internet radio shows that are 6 years old can't be the only ones that are willing to speak the obvious, cannot be the only ones who note that the emperor hath no clothing. Somewhere, there has to be one last journalist who is willing to stand up at a press conference of any one of these goobers, be it Willard Romney or Herb Cain or Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman or Newt Gingrich or God knows Rick Perry, and say, excuse me, Governor, I just need to get this clear for the record. You're not very intelligent, are you? Would you please tell us what your IQ is? IQ matters. You want to be president. Is there no one in this country willing to do that? Because you cannot be intelligent and not know where babies come from. You cannot be intelligent and not know that Libya is in Africa. You cannot be intelligent and not know that there is a vast difference between 2011 and 2001, and that difference is a net massive negative that requires increases in food stamps to keep already suffering Americans from simply starving to death. You cannot be candidate for president and run around saying, well, Social Security is just like slavery, which is what Herb Cain said. You can't. But apparently you can. I say you can't, but it's happening. It's going on. It's very real.
You know, in a moment of candor, Vice President Joe Biden, you know, the weather's getting cold, so he's not out waxing the Trans Am in the White House driveway anymore. Said, listen, if we don't provide stopgap funding to police departments and teachers, well, where the police departments are concerned, murder is going to go up, rape is going to go up, arson is going to go up. And the next thing you know, the for-profit media is advancing a right-wing hissy saying, oh, God bless America, Vice President Biden, he's trying to scare people into thinking they're going to get raped and murdered if we don't give them enough money to keep them from getting raped and murdered. That's unfair! Jeebus!
So we'll take a break and come back to your phone calls. A couple of lines open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, H-E-A-D-O-N, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. That's the way it's been for almost 6 years now. Isn't that cool? This is America's listener-supported, six-year-old liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Global Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Global Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Global Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't forget about that body stuff.
www.globalgenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
And a gentle reminder on this Friday on the front porch that if you would like to cleanse your hide with non-corporate soap, vegan-friendly no less, BubbleGenius.com is a magnificent place to do so. A wide variety of absolutely delightful, charming, fun, handcrafted soaps, all of which are, as noted, vegan-friendly, and which do a fine job of cleansing, are available. BubbleGenius.com. I think the world of them. Put horny, H-O-R-N-I-E, in the promo code box. You'll get 10% off your order, and you'll get a free bar of Horn soap. So just kind of remember. I hope you do. We use it here, and I can tell you it feels that it feels morally better than using God knows what. And then again, if you use that corporate soap, I mean, our gay listeners, according to Herb Cain, if you use that corporate soap, you might just wash the gay away, and you wouldn't want to do that. Right? Yeah, exactly. So, BubbleGenius.com. A little bit of email before we go to the phones. Let's see here. Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, if brains were powder and shot, the entire Repiglick and Slate doesn't have enough brain power to blow their collective noses. Ain't that the truth? He adds, by way of expansion,
It doesn't take that many. Remember, Bob, 10% of the black population in North Carolina voted for Jesse Helms when he stood for election because he was a good Christian man. Yeah, Marty noting that, Bob, according to Herb Cain, if they don't have jobs, it's their own fault. And by the way, forget the sweet tea. Bring on the rum. Yeah, I know the feeling. News Ninja Susan asking with regard to the Louisiana no cash for secondhand stuff. Have they never heard of the barter system? That would probably just give them a headache, Susan. Ray noting, you don't need an IQ to have money, but you do need money to be president. Sort of explains a lot, doesn't it? Andy in California says, Herm Cain, proof a moron can make it big as long as you wipe the rear end of the corporate oligarchs. Anti-Occupy Wall Street. Bob, as you probably know, Pillsbury put Herman Cain in charge of the Godfather's acquisition to turn it around, which means you cut the workforce and close down businesses. In the case of Godfather's, it was about 1,000 franchises cut down to 400, a lot of pain for those pizza workers. It takes some intellect to build and create a business. Any moron can tear a business down. Ain't that the truth? What really bothers me about Herman Cain is someone put him on the Kansas City Federal Reserve Board in the mid-1990s. No. Well, Andy doesn't get his facts wrong. This amazes me because he has no concept of economic justice or the benefits of Keynesian economics. Well, he flat out rejects them. None at all. Just look at his 999 regressive tax baloney. He's selling Koch Brothers regressive tax economics to benefit the top 400 and top 1% of taxpayers. Herm Cain is probably one of these kick down and claw your way up to the corporate ladder executives who places his total focus into pandering to his management and making them look good at the expense of those below him. Herm Cain is everything the Occupy Wall Street folks are fighting against. Thanks, signed Andy. No, thank you, Andy. Ever so true. So let's go to the phones. It's Friday on the front porch, and that's enough of filibustering. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Jim?
Yeah, I just zoned out.
Happens to me all the time.
Just went boom and woke up to hear that beautiful music. Who was that?
That was the Manhattan Transfer and a song called Soul Food to Go.
Do you know the name of the album or the...
Well, in my case, it was on the Best of the Manhattan Transfer. You can't go wrong owning that album.
Okay, that was really nice. I used to listen to those people a lot.
I played softball with them once. No kidding. They were the headline act of the W.C. Handy Music Festival way back when I was a little DJ. And we played a charity softball tournament, and I played charity softball with the Manhattan Transfer.
Really? It was just such a curious combination of, I don't know how to describe it. Excuse me, I just woke up, and, you know, I'm just sort of...
No, I understand completely. You know what I find interesting? I'm looking at the songwriting credits on it, and Doug Feger is, or maybe Feiger, I never did know how to pronounce it, is listed as one of the composers. And, of course, he was the front man. You remember the Knack? My Sharona, all that stuff?
Oh, yeah, 79.
Yeah, I think that's the same guy. Which is really weird to come up with something like that as compared to, you know, Good Girls Don't, but I do.
Yeah, I remember that. I sure will. I surely do. Excuse me. Like I say, I'm just like a submarine. I'm blowing my ballast tanks coming to the surface. And I woke up and I thought, you know, wow, who is this? And I even emailed you. You probably got that. But anyway, that's really lovely.
Isn't it? I thought it would be a nice little... kicker to the whole...
Well, the nicest things you ever played is that you've been on this program. I can tell you that right now.
well, it's not quite up. What was that Frankenstein thing I played one time that you were so fond of?
God, I don't remember now. What was that thing? By the Frankenstein drag queen?
Yes.
Well, I mean, that was just pure camp, but I mean, yeah, I do remember that. What was that song anyway? You'll have to excuse me. I feel like Hal 9000 when, they're putting my boards back in. What was that Frankenstein drag queen
song? I don't know. I'm going to have to look it up now because I've made myself curious.
Well, I remember that. We had a huge chortle about that. But that's all. Manhattan Transfer, the best of the Manhattan Transfer.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, it was a combination of almost like reggae, calypso. What other elements could you put into a song like that?
Well, I think, there was mention of from Kansas City to Brazil, that kind of thing. I think there was some... There was some some Brazilian stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to put your finger on everything that's in there.
Okay.
Sort of a musical gumbo, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, a delightful musical gumbo. It really was. But like I say, I had just zoned completely out. And then when I woke, or upon I was waking up, I was hearing this music. At first I thought it was the television, which I had on mute. I said, couldn't be that. And then it was coming out of the computer speaker, and I said, that's really nice.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Okay, the best of the Manhattan Transfer. And definitely I agree with all your people about their comments about Herman Cain or whatever.
Well, at some point in time, Jim, is it just... I don't think we're dealing with issues of politeness or manners or rudeness. At some point in time, when somebody's a moron, isn't it incumbent to point it out? I mean, really, Mitt Romney doesn't understand how birth control works?
He doesn't.
No. He says it prevents conception. It doesn't. It prevents implantation in many instances.
Well, I was watching CNN this morning, and I think they were making reference to the fact that the 7 billionth child person is about to, there are now 7 billion people on this planet now. And they were talking about just how in the world can we possibly be able to resource the burgeoning population on this planet. It's just not going to work.
No, and it shows no sign of letting up, really. Especially
I mean, God, I can remember when there were like 2.5 billion when I was like a teenager or something like that. And
the world was fairly crowded then.
Yeah, and I've always believed that basically all the problems in this history of this planet has been caused by there are too many people and not enough means to resource them. And you've got all these people rubbing shoulders and getting in each other's way, and then they are trying to steal resources from one another or take advantage of those who have, and as opposed to those who have not. And basically, that's exactly what it is, but not in the sense of a class struggle. But what I'm saying is, you've got just too many people on this small blue planet in order for there to be any way to take care of them.
And there's a fact that plays into that, Jim, that I think is so very important and does not get nearly the play that it deserves. And that is this. The business with Mitt Romney and contraception is in the context of a question he answered from Mike Huckabee on Fox about, would you support a constitutional amendment declaring that life begins at conception? Oh, yes, I would, says Willard Romney. And they've got that on the ballot down in Mississippi now. And, of course, you and I both know, and everybody else does, about what the Roman Catholic Church's stance is on conception, or contraception, rather. So you take those two things and you add them together. And you also consider the full-on assault on not only Roe versus Wade, but Griswold versus Connecticut, and the concept and all the attendant conceptualization around not conceiving and contraception. And then you add in this one little soupçon of pure fact that if we look at an radically overpopulating planet, because, you know, sooner or later, as we're seeing, you know, you go back to being a teenager in a planet with 2.5 billion people on it, we're about to cross the 7 billion barrier, and that's in the course of your life, Jim. So we're talking about exponential functions of mathematics, right?
Precisely.
Okay. Well, there's one thing out there, and I remember when the right wing had a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy and kittens with crocheted tails over this. There's one thing, and it is statistically significant. It is factually accurate. It was mathematically provable, sociologically observable, all the things that we do when we want to find out if something is real. And that is this. Anywhere you go in the world, but particularly in the undeveloped world, such as we call it, and that's a little bit elitist in its own right, but in places where there are way, way, way tons of poor people.
Well, you know, Africa was cited as one of the greatest sources of this population explosion.
But, of course, because China's trying to get a grip on it with their two kids per family kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you know, India is blowing up, too. The one thing that is most important to consider in this whole equation is that one thing changes this dynamic more than any other. If you give a woman in the so-called third world access to contraception, she will gladly make the choice to not have 15 babies in her life.
Of course she will. Of course.
And it is the one thing that probably stands the greatest chance of this continuing to be a livable planet, and necessarily the hosts of forces aligned against that idea of empowering poor women throughout the world is a staggering array of church people and political types and so-called conservatives.
Yeah, I tried to explain to some of these people who believe in no contraception and, you know, who want people to have all these unwanted children or wanted children, whichever, but they can't take care of them. But there's such a thing as the Malthusian Doctrine, which states that, you know, while a population grows at a geometric rate, the means to resource them only can barely keep up at an arithmetic rate, if I'm not mistaken. And like I say, I'm still foggy, but I believe that's correct.
I think you likely are.
I think that's what Malthus said.
And you know, Malthus is also noted, and his name is frequently spoken with the inclusion of hisses and spitting, that, you know, the planet will eventually take care of its own population problems. And the phrase used for that usually is the big die-off. Because, you know,
nature does have a way of correcting itself.
Yeah. As Kate notes from time to time, all, you know, chaos is self-correcting. I may have gotten that wrong, but it's very much true. And what, you know, whether it's disease or warfare, or I mean, look what the Black Plague did to Asia and Europe.
Oh yeah, just hundreds of thousands of people died because of rats that were coming from the east to the west and
carrying fleas
on ships and sailing into Venetian ports and ports all over the cities of Western Europe, and of course the outcome was absolutely dreadful. I mean,
well, it was absolutely dreadful in the short run, but it also is what gave rise to the you can kind of draw a bright line between the Black Death and the rise of the merchant class and the birth of the Renaissance in Europe, because the lack of labor gave people who were still alive and could do things leverage over the heretofore controlling feudal lords that would not have otherwise existed.
Yeah, it did, because, I mean, the feudal lords had to come out of the castle and start plowing the fields and doing things like that that they never thought they'd have to do because they'd lost all their serfs and peasants and things of that nature.
You know, Barbara Tuchman wrote, most of the time, Jim, when you hear the name Barbara Tuchman, you think about the Guns of August.
Oh, she did a lot more than that, like the Proud Tower and many other things.
Well, she did in particular one that examined all of that Black Death, rise of the merchant class dynamic called A Distant Mirror. And it is absolutely brilliant. And I keep clicking that little thing
that.
On Amazon saying, I want to read this on Kindle.
Yeah, I remember that. She was an absolutely brilliant woman. And I just don't understand how these people who are such advocates of no birth control, I mean, and this is what I've said to them, too. I said, you know, they don't give a damn after the child is born. I mean, it's all while the child is in the womb and the developmental process.
Well, absolutely true. And if we want...
How are you going to feed it? How are you going to take care of it and make it a useful member of society and not something that's going to be a burden on the state and end up in a institution or a prison because it's born into such reprehensible circumstances that, you know, the outcome is determined. It really is.
And you know, you're not making that assertion in a vacuum, Jim. It's not like it's without evidence, and we have it right before us this evening, because there is no more pro-life senator than Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, the junior senator of Alabama. And, you know, when this clown stands up and says that there are too many poor people eating, I mean, that's what he said, you know, because food stamps have gotten out of control. When a pro-life guy says that, you know, if a normal person said that, their head would spontaneously combust.
Well, you know, the excesses of population growth and things of that nature, or people who are unwanted, you know, in one particular case, while they're still, you know, in the womb, they're wanted, but when they come out, they're not, leads to the rise of sciences like eugenics and things of that nature. And we all know who were practitioners of the doctrine of eugenics.
Absolutely. And it doesn't lead to any good end.
No,
social, you know, social Darwinism, that kind of stuff. And I kind of hate that term, social Darwinism.
It's a real term, and
But it imputes something to Darwin that wasn't Darwin's. You know what I'm saying, Jim?
Well, the survival of the species, basically, is what I think he's talking about.
Yeah, but when you turn it, you know, when you go to that term, social Darwinism, you know, that's a means of saying exterminate whoever you're more powerful than. And call it survival of the fittest, and that's really not in keeping with anything that Darwin ever asserted or posited.
No, but things have a way of being hooked to certain things to Darwin and things of that nature, which he didn't intend when he was aboard the Beagle
and without a doubt, and that happened to a lot of people. You know, Nietzsche gets that rap, and so does Wagner. Now, you can say a lot about Wagner, that you know, his operas are interminably, intolerably bombastic and long-winded and whatnot. But
they're wonderful.
But he pre-existed that regime, but that regime co-opted him. And that regime also co-opted Nietzsche.
Right. But, you know, Wagner wrote some of the most beautiful music in the world, in my opinion. I love him. And have a lot of his works here, right here. And, of course, Adolf Hitler was very much an admirer of Wagner because of, his stories were founded in these Norse Eddas and things of that nature.
Yeah, Teutonic mythology.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, when you listen to things like Tannhäuser excuse me, I'm still not quite functioning, things from the Ring Cycle or Parsifal or the Fliegende Holländer, the Flying Dutchman.
Was Tristan and Isolde his?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Well, and you know,
we have now exhausted and my knowledge of opera, Jim.
And the Liebes, the love death from that, you know, is the one that just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds, and it's like a musical orgasm, for lack of anything more specific on my part. But I mean, he was very fortunate in that he had Louis II of Bavaria, who became his patron. And because Wagner was involved in a number of scandals in his life, and a lot of them were financial and marital and this, that, and the other, but he had Louis II, the last of the Wittelsbachs of Bavaria, who underwrote his, you know, his means to create some of the music there. You know, the one, Ludwig was the one who put Neuschwanstein. And he, of course, called the Mad King of Bavaria. I don't think he was mad at all. You know, if I would have been in his position, I would have done some of the stuff too. But, I mean, he built some beautiful things and had these, like, underwater caverns where he would take a ride in his boat. And, of course, he and his doctor were drowned on the lake, of, shores of a lake in Bavaria under mysterious circumstances after the people in Bavaria dethroned him. I mean, he had two homes. One was at Neuschwanstein. The other was, I think, at Linderhof. But he was called the Mad King of Bavaria. But I just wonder really how mad he was. But I guess there was a certain element of insanity toward the end of his life, because he just became a total recluse and, you know, was deposed because of the excess spending. But he built some beautiful things, and he certainly, I think, paid some very good money to
get some pretty darn fine art.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you've ever been to Neuschwanstein or not, but I mean, it's just, well, it's, you know, the castle that Disney modeled his
Cinderella's castle off of, and by far Neuschwanstein is much the more beautiful.
Right. But nonetheless, this business of overpopulation is definitely something that's, they were paying a lot of attention to that on CNN. And, you know, there comes a time when you have to do something. And if you don't, the corrective nature's own means of correcting the situation can be very disagreeably unpleasant.
And without any particular rhyme or reason either, and that's worth remembering. You know, being white and American doesn't save you from some of that.
No, it doesn't. And I just don't understand why these people are just so, they're absolutely crazy when you mention that subject and you want to talk about Planned Parenthood and you try to explain to them, you know, if you can't afford something, you simply can't have it. Or you shouldn't have it if you can't afford to take care of particularly a life. I mean, if you can't afford to resource that particular being, and if you can't take care of it, then why bring it into the world and make it a burden on society to the point where society eventually collapses because of your own lack of responsibility?
And see, the fundamental problem, Jim, is that you are applying intellect and understanding. Back to Nietzsche for a minute. Wasn't it Nietzsche who identified the difference between Apollonian versus Dionysian? I think it was.
Yeah, I really don't know.
Apollonian being sort of cool and detached and intellect-driven, and Dionysian being, represented by the revels of the Bacchanal. And,
yeah,
and emotion.
The god of
emotion-driven, right?
And that's revelry and
that's what we're dealing with here. On the one hand, it has been argued that Christianity is Apollonian, but what you have in the form of these right-wing, hardcore religion industry fundamentalists is you have a Christianity that has been rendered Dionysian, and consequently, they are incapable of responding to anything in the means that you are, to wit, with intellect and a bent toward
rational analysis. They don't do that. They can't get past, it's a little bitty baby the minute the sperm hits the egg, and after that, it's filled with the Holy Spirit. And that takes care of everything for them. And their heads don't explode because to have cognitive dissonance such as to create a sort of spontaneous combustion, there has to be cognition. And they're not doing cognition.
You know, I ask these people sometimes, I said, what do you think the history of the world may have been if Hitler's mother had had an abortion or had miscarried or had never been conceived?
Oh, see, I dealt with that a couple of weeks ago when I was down in Kentucky. I had this fundamentalist say, well, should a woman who is syphilitic and has had 7 children and they've all been retarded and she's got another child in her and she's carrying another child, should she have an abortion? I said, well, if she wants to. And he said, well, you just killed Beethoven.
I know, I've heard that too.
Yeah, and my response was, should an upstanding farmer's wife, who is a good Christian, who is carrying her, what, 2nd child to term, and it's perfectly healthy, should she bear that child? Well, sure. Well, you just gave birth to Hitler.
Well, do you remember the film A Judgment at Nuremberg?
Absolutely.
Do you remember the defense that Maximilian Schell was giving Burt Lancaster? As far as racial, the reproduction cycle is concerned, particularly with people who were filled with all types of birth defects and things of that nature.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, and he was trying to defend his client and did so brilliantly in the movie and actually cited the great American jurist, Oliver Wendell Holmes, who had said when it happens after 2 or 3 generations, then sterilization must occur.
And Holmes never backed away from that.
No. And, you know, of course, you know, in the film, and I looked it up, and I said, well, he's right. And, of course, Maximilian Schell is one of my favorite actors. I think he's just a marvelous actor, and he did such a outstanding role as Herr Roth, the defense advocate in that particular film. And, well, it was a great movie. It really was. I mean, it had a number of luminaries in there, from Spencer Tracy to Judy Garland to Montgomery Clift and Burt Lancaster and God only knows who else. Even Colonel Klink was in there. Verna Kempler, I think, was on that thing. But anyway, he made a very valid point to me in his defense of Emil Janning, the defendant in the doc played by Burt Lancaster, and cited Oliver Wendell Holmes, the great American jurist.
Although I don't know if the actual counsel knew it at the time, but like Freud, Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. had also had more than a passing fancy for cocaine. And I'm not saying that the one produces the other, but it was that was a school of thought at that period in time in the late 19th and early 20th century. It was openly discussed. You know, one of the favorite bête noirs of the right wing religion industry crusaders against women's insides is Margaret Sanger, because she made passing reference to the same topics. You know, generationally congenital birth defects and et cetera, et cetera. And she was, and I see it all the time. She was just like Hitler.
Well, you certainly, you know, if you can detect a propensity for something like that, it's my personal belief, and this may offend somebody, if it does, I'm very sorry. No, I'm not sorry. I don't make any apologies for the way I feel. And I think you should head it off to pass.
Well, I tend more toward the line of thinking that says you make the option available.
Well,
you know, I mean, because the big fashion now among
these dirt ignorant Republican presidential candidates is, to, you know, well, you know, Herb Cain said it. He said, no, not even in the case of rape or incest.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That is absolutely the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Well, would anyone challenge, and I come at this from a very, very personal place, but would anyone challenge a woman's right not to give birth to a child that was not going to have a chance to live a year? You know, it goes back to the guy who performs third trimester abortions moved into Maryland, and you might remember the story about how they were picketing his landlord's children's elementary school to intimidate his landlord's children in order to get him to throw the doctor out of the space he had rented. Well, they call those third trimester partial birth abortions, and they love to, I think they masturbate while they do it, Jim, because they get all this, and then the doctor jams a pair of scissors into the back of the little baby's neck.
Oh, yeah, they get into all types of
it's macabre, and they enjoy it.
Well, I mean, they love natal mechanics and procedures and stuff like that.
And the thing is, when the fact of the matter is, and you can ask healthcare professionals and nursing professionals, and they'll tell you that the reason those third trimester abortions take place is because there, among other things, there are times when a woman can neither deliver the child to term caesareanly or vaginally. To do so will kill the mother.
Yeah, I remember this movie called The Cardinal with Tom Tryon, in which I think his sister had to die under those circumstances. And, of course, as a prince of the church, he could not do anything to help her. And she was played by Romy Schneider, the German actress. Remember that film, The Cardinal?
Yes.
Same thing there, you know.
Yeah.
If it's going to kill the mother, I mean,
And consider that the Republican-controlled House of Representatives recently passed a measure, not considered, but passed, with the connivance of a bunch of Democrats, Jim, something that has been referred to and is still just makes my head want to explode. It was accurately renamed the Let Women Die Act, that lets hospitals refuse to treat a pregnant woman, even if it is at the cost of her life.
Yeah, I remember you saying something about that earlier.
Our congressman voted in favor of that, Jim.
Well, these congressmen, as far as I'm concerned, are a confederacy of dunces. They really are. And they're, you know, what they're doing is they're exploiting this this very explosive issue with the religious right and the people who are dead set against an abortion under any circumstances. And what they're doing is, Protestants themselves, they can care less, but they know that if they continue to stump on these doctrines, it's going to help get them reelected. You know what I'm saying?
Indeed. Indeed.
I mean, they could care less personally, but they say, well, here's a hot button issue, and I know if my opponent comes out against, and is, pro-choice, and I'm pro-life, well, I'm going to get a whole lot more votes than you'll ever think about.
Well, and here in the West Virginia 3rd District, you just know that that Nick Joe Rahal is terrified of the religion industry.
Well, yeah. I mean, because he realizes that he cannot be reelected if he does not take that particular stance. And it's just political pragmatism that's born by this type of thing that we've been talking about. But listen, I've always been for Planned Parenthood, and I believe that if you can't take care of something, you should not have it, and you should show members of the human race the same mercy and compassion that a veterinarian would when he stays animals and prevents them from being born into a life of misery and hunger and not being wanted, really. And, of course, you know how I feel about animals.
Yes, indeed. Indeed,
and,
I do.
You know. And, by the way, deer are not rats with horns. If you're going to have a garden, buddy, build a fence to keep them out. You know?
Oh, I've built them. I've built them. I've used human hair. I've peed around the garden. I've built fences, and they keep eating my garden.
Well, I'm sorry about that, but
well,
you know.
No, it's also a failure of game management, because when you've got a herd of 35 does standing in your backyard, that's a population that's been allowed to run out of control. But it's also a function of what we're doing up in the higher mountains, because we destroy their habitats and they naturally come down here.
Exactly. I mean, that's happened with more than things than just deer.
Oh, we found bear sign in our backyard. Our backyard. I mean, I don't live 8. You know, I don't live 8 miles up a holler. I'm 2 miles from a fairly small town. But yeah.
What about wolves?
Well, not so much wolves, but coyotes. Certainly, you can hear them. You can hear them howling on a lot of nights.
Mm-hmm.
And they breed. And the nice thing about coyotes is they can breed with stray dogs. And you know what? You don't get a litter of dogs. You don't get a litter of puppies. You get a litter of coyotes.
Yeah, that's a dominant strain in that particular situation. It surely is. Well, my friend, I don't know. We can't solve these problems tonight, but we can certainly talk about them. And I made my feelings known. I've taken up too much of your time, really. But, again, thank you for the lovely song to which I woke, and the conversation concerning Richard Wagner and things and that has stemmed from that. We've gone the whole gamut, haven't we?
Well, that's what the front porch is for, Jim.
Well, listen, you take care, and good night, and have a good weekend, and happy Halloween.
Indeed. Thank you, Jim, and same to you. Bye now.
Okay.
Our buddy Jim, another one who's been with us for a very, very long time. I remember the first time Jim called, I was still on the, it was still in the days of bad old terrestrial radio, and he said, I haven't heard anything like you since I left D.C. That was a compliment. Before we go back to the phones, an email just coming in, and let's just add this to the list tonight. Email comes in from Maura, another one who has been with us for a very long time and without whom we would be most assuredly lost. She says, I'm beginning to think that maybe Rick Santorum was molested as an altar boy. What else explains his hatred of gays? I really don't think he's a closet case. And what she's referring to comes from Raw Story, and it is as follows. Republican president, oh, I'm sorry, broadcaster voice. You know, I got to thinking, by the way, I got to thinking something earlier today. On that show whose name I will not mention because you'll write to me, why are you doing that to yourself? But I do it for you. But whose name I will not mention. They had David Gregory on in that long segment about what an unserious candidate Herb Cain is. And I can't look at David Gregory without seeing him shucking and jiving up on that dinner stage with Karl Rove singing the MC Rove rap. And maybe I was just cranky, or maybe it was I found a can. I was coming through Charleston when I flew back in from Georgia last week. Stopped in one of the Kroger's down there in search of some frozen kosher soup that Texas Betsy had put me onto that was supposed to be available at the Kroger's, but wasn't. But along the way, I did find a can of decaffeinated Café du Monde coffee with chicory. So maybe it was the chicory this morning that just made me cranky. So maybe I was cranky with the chicory, but I looked and, you know, David MC Rove Gregory, and a little thought just popped into my head, and it was this. Can any of us, imagine Walter Cronkite, Frank Reynolds, Huntley or Brinkley, shucking and jiving on that stage with Karl Rove? Can you? Because I can't. The guy who took off those black-rimmed glasses and was struggling to keep it together as he told a horrified nation that John F. Kennedy had been murdered in Dallas. Walter Cronkite.
Can you imagine him doing a bucking wing next to a political Machiavelli at a correspondence dinner? Because if you can, you know something more or perhaps less about, or worse, about Walter Cronkite or any of those other greats. You know, Edward R. Murrow. Can you see him doing it? Because I can't. And it sort of was this little microcosmic picture of what happens when journalism and information get merged with entertainment and you get infotainment. I mean, I'm sure, I don't know how big it was back in the day, but I'm sure that maybe Cronkite attended a White House correspondence dinner or something like that along the way. I have no doubt he was a social animal. But to get up there and completely throw your credibility down the toilet like David Gregory did. No, I can't. So pardon that little digression. Let me get back to Rick Bro Fro Mix, Frothy Mixture Santorum. And what a reminder that I have to do the news announcer voice. Republican presidential candidate Rick Santorum is deadly serious about stopping gays from getting married. Earlier this week, the former Pennsylvania senator told Caffeinated Thoughts that he would be willing to die in the fight against marriage equality. Quote, "The battle we are engaged in right now is same-sex marriage. Ultimately, that is the very foundation of our country, the family. What the family structure is going to look like," Santorum explained. "I'll die on that hill." Really? Really? Last week, being mocked on a Saturday Night Live skit was the same as a teenager bullied to death. This week, trying to keep two men who love each other apart, or two women who love each other apart, is the same as a bloody, brutal battle for some hill in Vietnam or Korea. I'll die on that hill. Get climbing, Rick! The candidate later went on to explain that sex between a man and a woman is special, and even birth control is not okay. "We'll repeal Obamacare and get rid of any idea that you have to have abortion coverage or contraceptive coverage. One of the things that I will talk about that no president has talked about before is, I think, the dangers of contraception in this country, the sexual liberty idea. And many in the Christian faith have said, you know, contraception is okay. It's not okay because it's a license to do things in a sexual realm that is counter to how things are supposed to be. They're supposed to be within marriage. Joyless and miserable." No, he didn't say that. I did. They're supposed to be within marriage. They're supposed to be for purposes that are, yes, conjugal, but also procreative. And that's the perfect way a sexual union should happen. When we take any part of that out, we diminish the act. If we take one part out, it's not for the purpose of procreation. It's not for one of the reasons. And you diminish this very special bond between men and women. So why can't you take the other parts of that out? And then all of a sudden it becomes deconstructed to the point where it's simply, get me my whip. It's simply pleasure. Whap! And that's certainly part of it. And it's an important part. Don't get me wrong. But there are a lot of things we do for pleasure. And this is special. And it needs to be seen as special.
I know most presidents don't talk about those things, and maybe people don't want us to talk about those things, but I think it's important that you are who you are. Birth control is not okay. You know, there was a time when John Kennedy had to take to the public airwaves to explain that he would resign as president if the Pope tried to control him. In 2011, we have regressed so far that Rick Santorum is telling the American people that he would govern according to the edicts of the See of St. Peter. That whether you're Catholic or not, Buddhist, animist, Jewish, Hindu, Seventh-day Adventist, it matters not. He would apply the rules of Holy Mother Church, which is wholly complicit in the overpopulation of this poor, benighted little planet, to every single American, and claim a First Amendment right to do so the entire time. Does that scare you? Because it scares the piss out of me. And even though this little bastard's never going to be president, don't rule out that he might be somebody's running mate. And that should make your blood run cold. Especially the women. But also the men. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Yeah, there's something going on there deeper than what I previously thought about before, about all that, you know, now not using birth control and all that kind of stuff. You know, when Jesus went into the temple and he said, this day, did he say that this day all governments on earth, you know, shall ban birth control?
No.
Is that what he came for?
No. Oddly enough, even though there were practices of contraception and postpartum exposure.
Well, I saw that thing you were talking about, Rachel talking about last night, and I saw it. Do that, and I thought, you know, with all these laws that they're passing in different states to get mothers who've had miscarriages
criminalized.
Uh huh.
Well, that's what the Mississippi Life Begins at Conception statute would be. You know, any woman who had a miscarriage.
They will call that conception. I don't know.
I mean, any woman who has a late period, if this passes in Mississippi, any woman who has a late period is a potential murderess.
Yeah. So
I mean, that's sobering, you know, isn't it, Juanita?
Oh, yeah, very sobering. It's just, there's got to be, I'm sorry, I do believe in conspiracies because, you know, historically, they're a fact. And not all of this conspiracy is being talked about necessarily are, but I think this is a deep underlying conspiracy of some kind.
Yes, and the conspiracy is to destroy the women's to destroy the advances in human and civil rights that women have made going back to roughly the 1870s. That's what it boils down. That's what it boils down to. It is a drive to get women back into the kitchen where the right wing, in its sort of weird little leave it to Beaver fantasy, feels that they belong. But again, they're not very good at the whole thinking game, Juanita, because one of the reasons that women were driven from the home and into the workplace, and maybe some folks don't want to think about it that way, but it's very much a reality. One of the reasons women were driven from the home and into the workplace was to drive down wages.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but I'm sure you're right. That's rings true to me.
Because to this day, despite the Lilly Ledbetter Act and despite efforts toward equal pay for equal work, it still doesn't exist. Women are still paid less than men. And as a result of that, wages depress. And that is not me being some sort of Luddite caveman saying women shouldn't work outside the home. No, absolutely, I am not saying that. But how many families in this country deal with issues of daycare and child care when perhaps one or either of the two parents would prefer to stay home and take care of the children? It doesn't have to be a sexualized issue. It can be a stay-at-home dad. But they both have to go out and work. They both have to go out and work, yeah. Juanita, because they have been driven into that workforce.
Yeah.
You know, for all, it's worth mentioning here on the, you know, the Horn 6th birthday, it's worth mentioning that the last time the majority of American households were made up of single wage earner households in which one or the other parent stayed home while the other went to work every day. Now, remember, Ronald Reagan and family values and all of that palaver from Falwell, who was, I hope, merrily roasting on a spit in hell. All of that crap about family values started about 1980 with Ronald Reagan, the shining city on the hill and the greasy hair and the horses and all of that. But the last time that American families were made up of single wage earners was the Jimmy Carter administration.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I mean, I can't really say because I was a single mother then. You know, so I can't really say.
Yeah, because Charles and I are roughly the same age, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. You were born the same year. He was born a little later than you. But
okay.
Yeah. But, and you know, I have a proclivity for guys born in the year. For my,
well, it was a very good year. It was the next to last year of baby boomers.
It was a good year. Now, when my son was born, right after that, they had Jackie and the president had a child that died,
mm-hmm.
a little boy that died at right after birth. And I remember the place I was staying is this man said, oh, that's wonderful. That's great. You know, and I said, how can you say that? Because at the time, my son was in the hospital with, they didn't know if he was going to live or not. He had some kind of infection. He had to be isolated and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, I heard that talk down here. You know, they hate anybody that wants to help the little people out. But anyway, I wanted to call about Jenk.
Yes.
I don't know the reason for it, but maybe you would understand. I think Cassie was said that he wasn't broadcasting because of the rain
mm-hmm.
the other day. Well, I don't know if it was something to do with the equipment or not. I have no idea, but he went around and filmed a lot of the people there, you know, and interviewed them instead of the regular show. I think they're going to show it tonight in full. And I saw part of it the other day. And those people are wonderful, Bob. They're the sweetest people.
Yes.
That he interviewed. And I mean... There was World War II veteran, and did you know they have their own sanitation department?
Yes, they have really and for truly built community.
Yeah, they even and they're getting their money from people sending stuff to them. They're not just sending money; they're sending all kind. They got all kind of food, almost any kind of food. They got clothing. And this woman that was showing him around that I saw, she said that who has to get this? You just come and you ask for it, or you take it, or whatever.
It's straight out of the book of Acts, Juanita.
It's wonderful.
Remember? And they held all things in common?
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so maybe that was what it was, the reason he wasn't broadcast, because you said something about the rain and the equipment, but he was broadcasting the next day, yesterday. But the broadcast, you were asking how he's doing, and I don't know the details, but
I was later told that he is about to get a gig if he doesn't already. He's about to get a really, really sweet gig with Current TV. And
he's already signed up for that.
Yeah, and so that I think it was Texas
That's
Betsy.
Already been.
It was Texas Betsy who said, I imagine the Current TV probably has a few generators laying around.
Yeah, oh yeah. And that a lot of this will be seen on Current TV, but I think they're going there, you know, toward the end of the year.
No, I'm just plain old jealous. I need a gig on Current TV.
You do. I know you do.
If we could just figure out some way to, I don't know, lip sync my voice to some, you know, some handsome feller.
No, well, you know, Jenkins isn't supposed to be handsome to me. He is, but because I love him. But and what's wrong with your looks?
No, I've got a face made for radio, Juanita. That's the whole problem.
No, you don't.
Well, bless your heart.
But anyway, I wanted to report that. And also, I wanted to tell you a couple of little things. We have a law. What do you call it when they're proposition a law?
A referendum?
No, when the representatives, you know.
Oh, a bill?
Yeah, a bill. There's a young guy, he's born and raised in the peninsula, you know, southern Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they call it. And a lot of people call it that. But anyway, he's got a bill, you know, that we're having so much trouble with our putting people to death with injection or whatever.
Yeah, lethal injection.
Have you heard about this?
The guy who wants to bring back old Sparky?
Yeah. And
yeah.
Also he wants to have firing squads. You can choose your poison.
Juanita, that's the right-wing version of pro-choice. We can shoot you, or we can electrocute you. It's your choice, and you're free to make it.
So anyway, that's an actual bill that is in our state Congress, among other crazy, nutty things.
Well, and look, you know, I often think, and forgive me, if don't take offense, I often think of Florida and Texas sort of in the same breath. And while we're talking about prisoners' issues, you've got that bill in Florida. But over in Texas, you know, it's one of those stupid things, but for years, well, not really stupid, but for years and years and years, and I mean, going back God knows how long, you know, the condemned, I mean, Jesus, I think there's a line from Shakespeare that says, the condemned ate heartily, or something like that.
Yeah.
Or it goes back a long ways because, you know,
somebody said that.
When you got condemned to death, you got a last meal. Well, Texas, fiscally conservative Texas, has eliminated the last meal. So they bring,
they don't appreciate it.
Right. They bring you an apple and kill you.
God.
But now they've taken it a step further.
Yeah.
You get three meals a day, Monday through Friday, in the Texas prison system. Now, this isn't just death row. This is anybody in prison in Texas. Monday through Friday, you get breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it ain't much in the way of a breakfast, a lunch, or a dinner. I'm sure a lot of them feature what I like to call prison cheese. You know, that American cheese food.
What?
Prison cheese. That American cheese food product, spread product, that doesn't actually contain any cheese, that's made all out of vegetable oil, just like a Wendy's Frosty.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not much in the way of a meal in the first place. Well, on Fridays and Saturdays now, because they're having budget problems in Texas, and they're going to cut the budget and be fiscally responsible, they have now cut out lunch for inmates in the Texas penitentiary system.
Well, soon they will cut out something else and keep on. You know, they be lucky to get a glass of water now and then.
Right.
And we've got, as you know, all over the country, you know, a majority of the prisoners are in there for mostly for marijuana issues.
Right.
And they get a long, long sentence too. We had a young boy out here who was growing a few marijuana plants, making some extra money. And he's got 14 years, because our sheriff's all to it, you know. And our sheriff, he makes stuff against the law that's not necessarily against the law. You know, they had a thing that was the synthetic marijuana and these 7-Eleven stores and all.
Oh, stuff. Like bath salts and incense
yeah.
and, yeah.
No, it's something that's, it's, gives you a kick like marijuana, but it's not marijuana. And
Salvia.
Yeah, there you go. It wasn't actually illegal, but he said it's illegal here. He was making it illegal, and I don't know if they've since passed a law. But a lot of these Middle Easterns, you know, that have these stores, you know, they were getting in trouble about it. And, you know, I'm not saying that that was a wonderful thing to sell, but still, if it's not against the law, but anyway, that's our sheriff for you. And then another thing I wanted to mention was, I think I sent you an email about Mike Huckstraby.
Yeah, Huckstraby works. I mean, that's true to his spirit.
Well, I got Huckstraby.
That's good, too.
You heard about what he said to some people. I don't know why, I just saw a little bit of it, whether it was on his show or some other show, and he was talking to people. He said, find out what your friends and neighbors are, how they're going to vote, and if they're not voting our way, take the air out of their tires. Do whatever it takes to keep them away. Shouldn't he, isn't that like shouting fire?
It's a lot like in a crowded theater, exactly.
Shouldn't people get in trouble for something like that? I mean, I'm sorry.
I'm not trying to be mean. You know, we had about 24 hours, in the state of Florida last February, Agnes and me and the kids. And for 24 hours, you just, you know, little hillbillies like us, we just kind of look around, and bang, it's warm, and it's so pretty, and there's the beach, and all the pretty pastel colors, you know, because it's South Florida, and then you have this sober up moment and realize that, you know, this is a state where if somebody scares you, or if you scare somebody, the scared person has the right to blow your butt away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And all of a sudden it was like, come on, kids, let's go back to the room.
Yeah.
Because we're hillbillies. We can be scary just by standing around, talking funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ma and Pa Kettle.
I love those old films. By the way, David in Tennessee talking about lethal injection. He says, frankly, I'd rather face a firing squad. Certainly not wishing for that as an end, but the various formulations used on humans that are against the law to use on pets... He says, and the needles scare me.
Yeah. Well, Jim was talking about, you know, pets, you know, about getting spayed, and we should have some compassion on human beings, you know. And the one little kitty cat that I had, you know, I told you I have five now. I did have six the other day. But anyway, the one, she had two batches of kittens. And they had, I don't know, I guess around here the people steal them and all. And I don't know really what happened to them.
Well, you got some critters down there that eat them, too.
Oh, yeah. But we, so when I had a chance, I took her to be fixed, and she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so had her taken care of, you know.
Yeah.
Because she didn't need to have to go through that again. And,
no. And, you know, that's one of those.
Have to go through it.
That's one of those brutal little things from the animal kingdom. We think of them as our pets. But they're still very much animals operating by instinct. You know, one of the things that a tomcat will do is, if he can, he will come along and kill a brand new litter of kittens.
I didn't know that.
Because that will send the mama cat immediately back into estrus, and he can then thereby eliminating that. The genetic contribution and replacing it with his own.
Oh.
It's brutal. And it frequently kills the mama cat because she can't go through being pregnant that
well,
quickly.
And the same thing
obtains with humans. You know, you can't there's an old wives' tale or some old statistic that says every birth takes about 5 years off of a woman's life. And I don't know, but what it applies to men too, because you know, when Agnes and I started having children, I had this, and of course it predates radio and everything, but I had this lush head of reddish blonde hair. It's snow white and fallen out now, and they're teenagers. So, you know what I mean?
Teenagers can be very wonderful, don't?
Keep reminding me of that, Juanita.
They can.
And sometimes
they're not all creepy.
No, God makes them precious as little babies so that when they turn 15 and say, Dad, I want to learn to drive, and they just stay on you like a duck on a June bug, that you can remember that they were cute and precious one time and you don't have to strangle them.
That's true.
Juanita, I got to roll, but it's been a wonderful conversation. You have a lovely weekend.
Well, let me just tell you about this one cat I had.
All right.
That mama cat, she belonged to the neighbors, and she kept having kittens over at my place, and I would take the kittens in, and then she'd go off. So she kept on until she came over, and she was pregnant again, and I said, darn it, you know, I can't take this. And so...
She was a cat of loose morals.
In other words, I called a vet, and I said, at a time I was working, and it was cheaper, and I said, can you can you fix the cat that's pregnant? And they said, well, according to how far along. But anyway, to make a long story short, she became my cat. You know, I had her fixed, and she became my cat. And the way she died, you know, she kept being sick, and her little bottom had prolapsed.
Oh.
And it was just so sad. And I thought, she would have probably died at one time and had given birth,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, it might be a function of all those births, too. You know, it's worth remembering this in the context of suffering humanity out there, Juanita, the conversation Jim and I were having. You know, the sole purpose of women on the planet is not only to procreate, no matter how many times that the Rick Bro Fro Mix Frothy Mixture Santorum says that it is.
Yeah.
You know, that faith community saying so doesn't mean that it is so.
Yeah, so that's a comparing. We don't know what women. I know that I was butchered up when I had a child. And, you know, we don't know what happens to different people. And I think about people back in the Middle Ages and all, but my God,
The only mercy to all of that, Juanita, is the fact that no one living in any given time has the benefit of future knowledge. Whether it would be the Middle Ages, ancient Rome, or today, we live in the only world we have.
That's true.
And they didn't have the benefit of saying, you know, if only there was penicillin. Because it was always, you know, you wouldn't ask her something like that because it's witchcraft and Mother Church would burn you at the stake for even thinking about it.
Oh, yeah. Just like Jim was talking about that movie.
Yeah.
You know, where the woman had to have the baby.
Right.
I'm sure they said that was God's will, right?
Yeah, that's when
suffer.
That's when he gets kind of brutal. Juanita, have yourself a lovely weekend, dear.
You too.
All right.
Good night. Have a good whatever, wherever you're going.
All right. Thank you. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, she's Juanita referring to Monday when we go meet with the EPA. Kate writing in. And I'm not sure. I think Kate was the head up. She dropped a word. How I of all these old men. Yeah, I think I agree, Kate. In fact, I'm pretty sure I do. She says, I often want to call in to exercise my intellectual muscles so missing in the political arena. But I don't like to pile on with my opinions. Pile on, Kate. Pile on. Most of the old-timers here know my stance on all the tired and boring issues. Besides, my Verizon is spotty at best, and I would hate to get dropped in the middle of a raucous rant. I want, says Kate, to wish us all happy anniversary tonight, because I never know where in Montana I will be on the night of the party. I have to take issue with Jim. The other best song you ever played is when you bump me out with The Night Fly. Oh, how I miss the old days. Thanks for taking my mail. Kate on the Front Range. Note to listeners. Kate writes, if the dollars dries up, some night you will log on to dead air. Oh, how close we have come to that in the past. PayPal is on the right. See, long ago, Kate would call in because Kate was forever pointing out that I did a piss-poor job of trying to solicit contributions for the horn. And I still do, because I hate doing it. Because I feel, well, never mind. But she would take that burden for me and encourage people to contribute. You know, on any given night, we look for somewhere between $60 and $100. That's somewhere between 6 and 10 contributors. We are all but 37 minutes of the way through the program tonight. We have one contributor, thank you very kindly, to the Thrifty 250. And that's not me complaining, just observing facts. And we're so far behind the halfway point that we can't see it from here. Just saying. We go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Richard in California, Bob.
Well, hey, Richard.
Long time, no call.
Indeed. I was wondering about you the other day.
You were? Why?
Because it was a long time, no call.
Well, I've been in the
I
hospital.
Conjure people, Richard. Don't you understand? I mean, you know, I'm the world's best agnostic conjurer.
Well, good.
I am the shameless shaman.
I'm the atheist conjurer.
Well, then, between us, it must be a mighty potent medicine.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I got out of the hospital 10 days ago.
Oh, you okay?
I think so. I don't know. I don't have a diagnosis. I have a diagnosis about what it isn't, you know. But it gave me an opportunity to, you know, I'm a health commissioner in my county, so.
Right.
So while they're poking and prodding me, I'm poking and prodding them. And a very, very interesting situation. See, I live in unincorporated county up in the hills, but the city that I'm outside of, which is Richmond, California, has had the reputation at times of being the murder capital of California. And that distinction sort of goes around from place to place. I mean, sometimes it's East Palo Alto, it's been Oakland. But, you know, it gives you some idea of the poverty of that city that's down the hill from me. So if I look outside my living room window, if I look in one direction, I've got a clear view of the Golden Gate Bridge. If I look at a different angle, Why, I see the Chevron Richmond refinery. So, it, you know, it's an interesting contrast. We have a lot of black people living in Richmond, and many of them are politically involved. Black people came here, I think, to begin with, probably as Pullman porters and Pullman maintenance people. This was the San Francisco area maintenance base for the old Pullman company. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Pullman cars?
Huh?
Pullman cars, yes.
Yeah, the old sleeping cars. Because the Pullman company actually maintained those themselves. So, and then later on, there was an exodus here during World War II to build the Liberty ships and the Victory ships, big shipyards owned by Kaiser. Well, the, it's been a poor town, and it's large. I mean, it's relatively large. I think it's got about 100,000 people. Well, I went to the hospital. I had chest pain, and I went to the only open emergency room, really, between Berkeley and Vallejo. That's a large stretch of land and people with only one hospital.
And, you know, that just runs contrary to the conceptualization of what California is, Richard.
Which is what?
I'm sorry?
No, what is that conceptualization?
Well, that those one hospital situations, you know, that's not California. I mean, that's me.
Oh yeah, no, it's California has
more of my geographic bigotry, I suppose. But
no, it's not that, Bob. It's the impression that the media has pumped out for so long. The thing that so many people don't realize is that California, in many ways, is just an ordinary place, you know. San Francisco is an ordinary city. It just happens to have hills. You know, it has nice views. But it's not magic. It's a real, you know, it's a city. It's got city problems.
It's got grit.
Yeah, it does. But you don't see that part on TV. You don't see all the poor people. You don't see the homeless people that much. You know, you see all the tourist stuff. It happens to be an eastern-type city. It's maybe the only eastern-type city on the whole West Coast. The reason being that, the land is so valuable. It is so small that you just have a hell of a lot of people packed into this little place that's at the end of a peninsula. So you don't usually think about it this way, do you?
No. No, you don't. I mean, I think about San Francisco, and I think about Mark Twain and the Giants and the Ghirardelli Square or Ghirardelli Square. Cable cars, Rice-A-Roni, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's like you live in this town, especially where I did, I worked for the city, and, you know, and I really got to see a lot of the underbelly of the place. Like, oh, my God, you know. But you know, like I said, it's all these people that's all packed in together. And the city is uniquely the same as the county of San Francisco. So there's, like, one government where there usually would be two. And this, in turn, gives rise to fertile ground for political corruption. You know, it's like any place, I think, where you only have one political party is fertile ground for problems. And it doesn't even matter what that party is. But anyway, so I was in the hospital. I was in the one hospital. And the thing is, I was giving you background. With all these poor people, there are a lot of people who come into the ER, and many of whom are admitted to the wards, and they can't pay the bills. So this hospital is in deep financial trouble a lot of the time. You see what I'm getting at?
Yes.
And the question is, how do we keep this hospital functioning?
Wouldn't that question be ever so much more easily answered, Richard, if we just had Medicare for all?
Well, I'm going to go one further. I'm not real thrilled with Medicare. I want VA for all. The hell with Medicare. I mean, you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure which is better. I've always leaned toward Medicare simply because I've heard VA horror stories.
Well,
But maybe we're supposed to hear those VA horror stories.
Maybe you are supposed to hear them. I don't know. I mean, and it may be different from one place to another. The stories that I've heard in these parts have been very positive. And, you know, people go to the VA. I don't think they pay to use the system. Whereas Medicare has all these insurance industry type structures, you know, like co-pays, you know, and premiums. And it's just a lot of baggage. I'm on Medicare, so I'm looking at it. And anyway, so here I was taken in an ambulance down to the, you know, down to the local hospital. And we have a proposition on the ballot to tax ourselves, you know, a surcharge to keep this hospital going. And this is the third time that this has come up.
And if that proposition is rejected, what happens, Richard?
The hospital closes. And I brought that up at the last Managed Care Commission meeting.
And without sounding the horse's ass, which I in no way intend, and this is America?
Yeah. Yeah. And the county doesn't want it. The county has taken over a couple of small hospitals in other parts of the county. This is the biggest city in this county. And, you know, if the county takes it over, the county gets the red ink. And the county is hurting really badly for money. Our county employees are working furloughed time. You know, it's like they're furloughed so many days per month now, just like the state workers are, which means you don't come to work and you don't get paid. But the workload is still there, you know, and they're getting pay cuts. So, and of course, with the county being a unit of the state, the same thing's coming. The same thing's coming down from the state. So you know, times are very hard. And with all these people out of work, more and more people are coming to the county's health department for their health care. And the whole system is getting more and more impacted. So bad that I went to see my doctor, and I gave up after 2 hours. I had an appointment. I gave up after 2 hours. I left. I had another appointment. You know, and he had worked through his lunch hour that day. And that's, he does a lot of the time, you know. So I'm worrying about him burning out. And that's how it is.
That's frightening.
Yeah, right. And so I go into this local hospital. They get the gunshots, they get the stab wounds, they, you know, they get people like, they get everybody. And I go into the hospital and I get wonderful care, Bob. It's really a joy to be in a health system of some kind where the people who work there are dedicated. They're not in it for the money. You know, they go and they work in a rough community, and they're there because they want to be there. That's the kind of medicine they want to do. That's the kind of people they want to work with.
And, well, there are so many elements. You've described so many elements of a multifaceted problem, Richard, that, I mean, you know, you sit on your county's health care commission.
Yeah.
Where do you start to break the cycle of dysfunction?
That's what, well, wherever you can, you know. It's like,
Well, you know, not to be an ass, but that's kind of like the old question about how do I get to Carnegie Hall? You know, practice.
Well,
you know, wherever you can. And maybe that's what it comes down to. Maybe it's, you know, you wait until you see some crack emerge or some niche present itself and you sort of, but is there even the political will to do that? I mean, will this referendum pass that will save your hospital?
Well, the referendum probably will pass because the alternative is so scary, really. I mean, we can't have people being hauled by ambulances all the way to Berkeley or, for God's sakes, across a bridge.
Well, no, because that system can't stand it either.
I know. So I brought this up. See, understand, the Managed Care Commission is what I'm on, and I don't get paid for it, but it's this county. I've told you this before, and your listeners have heard it. My county operates the first government-operated HMO in the entire United States, and it's at least 30 years old. And this is very exciting, you know. And so I use the system, and because this is kind of democratic, we actually have a public kind of a steering body that's over it. You know, so it's like I could be appointed to this, and I was, by my county supervisor. So it's like I can go in there and I can help steer my own HMO. And is that great or what?
Well, it is. But, you know, there's always a but, Richard.
Yeah.
And the but is, you know, not everybody can, not everybody has one.
Right.
You know, I get the sense that there's at least a slightly greater responsiveness to. I mean, even though you know this is a story about one lone hospital for a whole lot of people, there's at least a little bit more awareness on the sort of consciousness horizon than what you have in a lot of other. I mean,
there is and there isn't, in the sense that.
I mean, the emergency room at the little hospital that we visit, you know, every time my guts blow up.
Yeah.
That's where a whole bunch of people just go to the doctor.
Yeah. That's
because there isn't one. I mean, we don't have an down here in a little town near where I live. We don't have an MD. I never see an MD. I see a very concerned, very caring physician's assistant. And he takes more time with me than an MD would take.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, he and I are going kind of back and forth over what the hell we do about my insides because, like you, I can't get a diagnosis. I mean, I can get a diagnosis, but we can't, but we're treating lab panels and CT results, and we still lack any kind of understanding of why these things keep happening to me. And I say, well, you know, what about a gastroenterologist or what about an endocrinologist? He said, you know, they're just not very good around here.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, I'm more than happy to hook you up, but I'd like to figure out some way to get you further away. You know, for my part, and I told him straight up, I said, I'd like to be seen by somebody, you know, outside of coal country, because you can't talk about coal toxins inside coal country.
I recognize that. I'm just curious, Bob, whereabouts is your PA located?
Well, I mean, just a couple of miles down the road.
Oh, so he's real local, huh?
Yeah.
And now where's the nearest doctor, for instance?
25 miles away.
What kind of town?
Little tiny county seat.
Fayetteville?
No, Somersville.
Okay.
I mean, there's a hospital in Oak Hill that I wouldn't take my dog to.
Right.
Then there's Raleigh General over in Beckley, but that's like, people use the little Somersville hospital as the doctor's office. Well, it's that times 10 at Raleigh General. I mean, it's like walking into a MASH unit over there.
Yeah, and by the way, that's what the ER down here is like, too. very good people. Very good people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. I'm not in any ways criticizing the people.
Yeah. But they shouldn't have to be doing this. This is what I think I'm hearing from you.
Yeah, well, you know, like every, and maybe that's the larger point to this conversation, Richard, is that like every other element of American society, and let me say that again, like every other element of American society, the infrastructure for this is absolutely turning to dust.
Oh, yes, really.
You know, I get sick of hearing Republicans say, well, why is it sick people from all around the world come to America? Well, because they're sick people who are sick millionaires. And millionaire treatment is different. You know, at one time when my dad was up at Cleveland Clinic getting his life extended, an entire floor was taken up by some exalted sheikh or Harif or whatever from Saudi Arabia or Kuwait or whatever. No, I'm not kidding. I'm not trying to be disrespectful.
No, I once worked on a Saudi project. That's why I'm laughing at.
And they had a whole floor.
Yeah.
And when they left, they gave away Rolexes and Louis Vuitton bags to the ladies, and it was great. But that's not the care that Richard gets. That's not the care that Bob gets.
Yeah. Well, I got wonderful nursing care. Boy, I couldn't have gotten better.
Right, and you get wonderful nursing care. We have tremendous nurses in this country, and they are so good that the accountants for the profit generating centers of the healthcare industry have figured out that they can wrench the work of three nurses out of one.
That's the really scary part of this. And, you know, what my county system has done is, what is it, a Hobson's? Is this a Hobson's choice?
Yeah, the horse by the door or no horse at all?
Yeah. See, we, you know, how to put it, this county, like many counties in California, is very, very large. And, you know, covers a lot of territory. Some areas of it are wealthy. Some areas of it are really impoverished and everything in between. And, you know, the wealthier parts, they tend to commute into San Francisco on Bay Area Rapid Transit. So, you know, they get in and out real fast. It reminds me of Wall Street, you know, it's like the commuters into Wall Street. That's all of the topic. But, you know, so we, I can't remember where I'm going with this. We have these discrepancies. It's all in this one county. So the county, with the increasing loss of homes, loss of jobs, loss of middle class status, in a way, more and more people have to get their health care, you know, from a public system in some way or other. And the system is bursting at the seams. If I want to see my doctor, I told you I waited for 2 hours to see my doctor and then gave up. Well, the next appointment I could make with him was 3 months down the road. And
yeah.
That's how it is. That's how it is.
It's just the reality.
That's the reality. Yeah. I saw a woman last night. She was just hired. So she doesn't have any sort of a following. But the thing is, the way that this works is you want an appointment. You have to call up at 7 o'clock in the morning and get into a mad scramble. And you may get a slot that day. And you may not.
Right.
We have a great advice nurse service here as part of this thing. A lot of the times the advice nurse will just tell the person to go to the ER because we have no appointments. So it's, you know, it's like what you're talking about. And, you know, as a health commissioner, it's like, I smart at that because this is not what the ER is for. You know, it's an abuse.
But what do you say to people who need the ER to be that?
go to the ER because it's all there is.
Bingo.
There's no alternative.
It is. And you know, therein lies the Hobson's choice very clearly.
Yeah. So our people, see, the health system saw it necessary to get more doctors because we have too many patients. And the only, so they did what they felt they had to do was to offer pay incentives to the doctors. Give the doctors a pay increase. Now we have doctors applying to work here. But at the same time, they're giving pay cuts to all the other county employees. And that includes these nice folks who work as admissions clerks, you know, and as different kinds of clerks. You know, they've all been really good in general.
Indeed.
I mean, it's a nice system. It's got nice people. And it's like they're getting all upset. They're getting furloughs. They're getting pay cuts on top of pay cuts, losing benefits. This is sick.
It is. And again, I reiterate, when I say things like crumbling infrastructure and America falling apart and more evidence that America is falling apart, you know, I'm not just saying something to be dramatic.
No, I know that, Bob.
The evidence is all over creation, and all it's willful hysterical blindness on the part of the GOP, the Republicans, whatever, or else it is just plain old fashioned hateful, god awful meanness, pig ugly meanness, and that's what I attribute to Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of Hood. Just pig-eyed meanness. Honest to God, the nerve of saying that there are too many people in America eating food. You know, just stop it. And nobody will call him on that BS.
Who said this?
Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of Food. Yeah, of Alabama, sure.
Well,
too many people eating food.
There seems to be a collective amnesia in our society, you know, a loss of rationality. It's very strange, but there's a
lot. No, it's not a loss of. It's not like we were walking and it fell out of our pocket, Richard. It is a deliberate assault on.
That too. But I'm saying the people absorb it. To many of us, things are real that aren't real to people elsewhere.
I mean, remember Al Gore's book, The Assault on Reason?
I didn't read it.
Well, I didn't either. But he wasn't kidding. The title was not a joke. Rational, reasonable cognition in this country is under assault.
Okay. Understood.
And as a consequence of that, it makes it harder for you to pass that resolution. It makes it harder to get roads built. You know, Jesus, for the second time, the United States Senate... Oh, damn, I'm banging on things... The United States Senate, the Republicans therein, stopped debate on a measure that would simply continue funding to cops and school teachers. How do you do that and call yourself a responsible member of a legislative body?
Well, they're not.
Right. The answer is you can't. I'm sorry, I'm ranting and tearing at my hair now, Richard.
No, okay. I mean, I'm looking at patterns, you know. I look back at, in my life, this business started during John F. Kennedy when he was faced with what was called the Do-Nothing Congress.
Well, and Harry Truman coined that phrase. The Do-Nothing 99th Congress, or whatever it was.
So he was faced with this, too?
Yeah.
Yes, I was too little.
Part of the reason he didn't want to run again. His approval ratings had gone down in flames. He did not want to be a defeated incumbent. And, you know, he and his lovely wife and their daughter, literally on January the 20th, 1950-whatever, walked out the front door or the back door of the White House, got in their beat-up sedan, and drove home to Independence, Missouri. I mean, that's what happened when you stopped being president if you weren't dead. But he did not want to be a defeated incumbent.
Mm.
And after Eisenhower had played footsie with both of the political parties and decided that he was, well, I'm a Republican, the handwriting was rather on the wall. And, of course, up against Eisenhower is poor, brilliant, well-spoken, intelligent, genius Adlai Stevenson. Game over. Because, you see, one of the things that, I mean, the people forget that Truman was talking, you know, the Truman administration was talking about universal health care, because that's when the whole ball got rolling. That's when the National Health Service got started in the UK. That's when they were doing it. That's when it was first being born in Germany, when it was first being born in France, everywhere, the civilized world. At the same time that we were cleaning up the rubble of the Second World War, they were saying, you know, we got to take care of our people. And it was not lost on Truman. And Truman had the guts and the nerve to say, you know, we need to integrate the military. Now, which of the two was of greater political difficulty? Integration of the military was not the more difficult. It was not the more difficult of the two. The more difficult of the two was doing something about health care. And he had a do-nothing Congress that would not, could not stand the notion of letting him have something like that. So America had to wait another, 17, 18 years before the old people could finally get covered.
Yeah.
No offense.
And let me give this perspective, is that to me it seems like since Truman, we've had really continuous Republican rule. Because when the Republicans are in power, they do their thing. When the Democrats are in power,
the Republicans make sure that the Democrats don't do their thing.
Exactly.
Precisely.
And they act as, what's the word I'm looking for? It's extortionists, really. Which brings me to Rupert Murdoch, who I see.
Well, I hate to say it, Richard, but we're going to have to save Rupert for another day because I do want to try to
Rupert
get to
for another day.
All right. Maybe we'll pick this up with Wednesday. I'm glad you called in. I'm glad I was able to conjure you.
Oh yeah, it's great talking.
All right, take care, Richard. Bye now. From the Bay Area, that's Richard. Yeah, you know, you don't make contact, we begin to worry. Yeah, really, we do. Let's see. Keep things going. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hey there, Bob.
Cossack, what's up, man?
Hey, how you doing?
I kind of hate to see the weekend. Not see the weekend, but see the weekend.
Yeah.
Because we've had a couple of great shows these past couple of nights.
I think so. You know, as I said last night, my heart goes out to the Occupy folks. I just hope that when the whiff comes down there, they'll be able to withstand it.
Well, did you happen to see that the whip came down on the Occupy folks in, let me see if I can remember how John told me to pronounce it, Melbourne, Australia?
Oh?
Yeah. The cops marched into the Occupy people at Melbourne and arrested about 20 people, and what had been about 100 people turned into about 400 people. The cops were, as I understand it, quite ugly.
It's not unusual. You know, if you don't mind an old man recounting deeds of past glory, so to speak, but, you know, the demonstrations we had in D.C., we were peaceful, too, up until the baton charges and getting hit with tear gas, and we started, you know, that's when we started to fight back.
Well, but I think, Cossack, if you will pardon me saying so, this latest round of folks has had a longer time to think about it and a longer time to inculcate in themselves the teachings of both Dr. King and Gandhi.
Yeah.
and they may be just a little bit better prepared for the crackdown.
That
certainly seems to be the case. That certainly seems to be what they are demonstrating.
I mean, I don't know if you've ever had the experience of being charged by a line of baton-wielding...
I can say I have not.
...riot-clad cops. It's not,
I've been near them, and they give me the willies just being near them.
It's not fun. It's not even funny. And, I mean, we had the snot knocked out of a spot.
And with all of these, they're looking for the opportunity to do that. And the brilliance of it is that thus far, they're not being given the excuse to do that. With a few notable exceptions, like Times Square last Saturday.
Yeah.
And even then, the pushback, especially from Marine Sergeant Shamar Thomas, was so profound. I think they were professionally embarrassed. I think he managed to embarrass the New York police, the NYPD.
I should hope so.
Cossack, I'm sorry I got to you so late, brother, but we're fresh out of night, but I'm glad we got to talk for a couple of minutes, brother.
Yeah, same here. Bob, have a good weekend. Kiss Agnes. Tell the kids hi.
I certainly will. They're at the homecoming football game tonight, so they'll be home presently.
For me, you know.
All right, will do. Cossack, take care and have a good weekend, brother.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that's it. For the weekend. Dang it. I think Rick Smith is next. I know he was off a couple of nights, or at least one night, but I think Rick Smith is next. I haven't heard from him to the contrary. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for making it all happen. Thank you to those of you who have contributed this evening. We started out with one member of the Thrifty 250. Another member took care of 10 slots. We also had other contributions that tonight we brought in a couple of nights worth of funding, and it is badly needed and much appreciated. Thanks to all of you who make it all go, our volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist Reverbo, my head writer David in Tennessee, John Fox, Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org, all the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. That's who I'll be with come this Monday evening. They are indeed the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.